Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Property Buyer and Sellers Podcast. This week, I'm very delighted to present to you Mr. Bob Harris, who is a member of the Chartered Institute of Building. He's a lecturer, was Master Builder of the Year in 2005 and 2008, and is a member of the All Party Environment Group. Bob, welcome to the show and thanks so much for coming on. Been really looking forward to having you on because COP26 has been and gone. Everybody's worried about meeting their Band C requirement as far as landlords concerned. And all of a sudden, the topic that you and I discussed, 20 years ago?
22 years ago.
has become to the fore.
It's unbelievable. 22 years. Can you believe it? All this time. And here in Norbury, we've got a state-of-the-art building built 20-odd years ago. Unbelievable.
Yeah, so Bob built a building called the Earth Dome right here in Norbury on Stamford Road. And it's an amazing building with all sorts of modern technology. And we'll talk to you about how that is and how it's been over the last 20 years, because you must be one of the few people in the country that have long-term experience of some of these efficiency measures that they're now saying are brand new. And in fact, they were there 20 years ago.
Absolutely. I mean, when I built the property in Norbury, Stamford Road, Norbury, the Earth Dome, it was the first domestic building in London to use ground source heat pumps. Can you believe it? The first building was built in Norbury 20 odd years ago, and everybody's just catching up now.
Yeah,
but the key to Norbury is, which I knew then, is it's a new building. It's not a refurbishment of a 1930s building. It's a new building. It has got insulation on the outside, underfloor heating. So everything in it meant that even though the heat pump was running on electricity, high rates of electrical charges, it was going to work well.
Yeah.
And that's all in the place.
Yeah, and it's been amazing. And we'll talk to you about your experience within that. Just starting off, just on a general trend, Bob, obviously we've just had COP26. The target is 1.5 degrees. Just in a broader sense, do you see any chance that we're going to do that with the measures that they're bringing in?
Okay. I'm working on another technology now, which is called called sequestration of granite dust into farm soils. And that will both mineralize the soils and take in carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. I've got 30,000 people follow me on that. If we move to that position also, which you won't hear about at COP, nobody really knows about it. But if we move to that position, which I hope, then I think we might have a chance of getting through. And that was, once again, that was developed in 1873 by an English
farmer. It's amazing. And it just tickles me to think that 22 years ago, you and I were discussing these new technologies that you were putting on that now seem to be groundbreaking. And here you are again talking about something none of us know about. I wonder if in 20 years' time, this will be something we're talking about again. If we're still here, of course, Bob.
We've got to speed that one up. You know, I'm using a very interesting technique. I'm using LinkedIn for that one. There's a lot of background psychology in that.
Yeah. So I just want to landlord today. I mean, our landlords are really anxious about this, Bob. I'm just going to read to you an article in Landlord Today with a couple of bits and then be interested in what you have to say about it. Landlords are obviously very scared about the new Band C requirement that we need to reach by 2025, or they may become unmortgageable and unable to be rented out. There is fear that work required to bring rental units up to new energy performance certificate levels by 2025 could render them unmortgageable. According to the Ministry of Levelling Up, there are some 13 million homes in England and Wales currently with an EPC rating of D or below. From 2025, new rules mean an EPC rating of D or below will not be able to take on new tenants. The latest warning comes from John Eastgate, Property Finance Director at Shawbrook Bank, who comments, for many properties, getting their property to a C is going to take a lot more than simply installing a new boiler. The reality is that for older properties, some of which may be listed, it will be an expensive exercise to make the necessary changes. Tell me, Bob, what are your thoughts on that?
I absolutely agree with it, really. The only thing I would say is that the EPC regulations do not measure do not quantify the efficiency of the boiler system or heating system you're putting into the house. They simply, at this stage, I believe, only look at the energy supply, be it gas, electricity, or LPG, for example. So when I put my ground source heat pumps, state of the art, still state of the art now, I would be expected to get grade one, grade A.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I talked to you about it before I got the EPC. We were going to put a press release out about it. But absolutely. What did I end up with? B?
Yeah.
And D?
Yeah.
No, B and C, that's it. For these brand new flats. It's ridiculous. And when I challenged the guy, he said, "Oh well, we don't measure the efficiency of the heating system, so they need to reevaluate all of the regulations across the government, EPCs, and all the other issues, whatever it might be, to make sure that they measure the reality of what is actually there."
Right. So now, in terms of you're one of the few people in the country that has long-term experience of air source and ground source heat pumps and systems to make them work and their cost effectiveness, and also the cost of maintaining and running them, which I think is a big part of it. So a number of questions that brings to mind. First of all, I understand, for instance, that the popular solution seems to be, or the suggestion, let me put it that way, seems to be from government that to put in an air source heat pump could be a massive efficiency. Now, from what I understand, you would need much bigger radiator pipes because they run at lower temperatures and much bigger radiators just to get the same level of heat. So is it going to work on older buildings, Bob?
No. What will happen is the system is slow to react, right, even with radiators. So right. You switch it off or you switch it on. The beauty of a condensing boiler now is that the condensing boiler will produce the heat, produce water of a high temperature, and you can quickly upgrade the temperature in the building very quickly. What's going to happen is people will start to, this is my view, start to use supplementary heating. And what are they going to do? They're going to have an oil-filled radiator to boost the temperature until the air source heat pump can produce the level of heat in the building. So
okay,
it's that. I think that is going to be a practicality. Now, I know that's the case because I own another property which we built down by the sea in West Wittering, which has got it's actually got a traditional boiler system in it, but it's got underfloor heating. When we go down there, though we run it at, say, 16, 17 degrees centigrade all the year, we get down there, they were freezing.
So this last it leaks week, all the...
this yeah. last week, we went down there and we bought an oil-filled electric heater just because we're absolutely freezing and waiting for the underfloor heating system to come in.
Right.
And that is what's going to happen. Plus the fact... as we've got another problem here, we've got COVID. What do you want to do with COVID? Keep the windows open.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and you can't do that with one of these systems and make them work. So what you're saying is that the solutions aren't there for the problem. Would that be fair, Bob?
I'm saying they've got to get real with the systems that we've got at the present. Many people, the majority of people, won't be able to put air source heat pumps into their properties. You need a tank with an air source or ground source heat pump. The tank is an enormous tank. Where are they going to put the tank?
Right.
And how are they going to insulate it? Once you put the difference between a combination boiler where you have no tank and a system where you have a tank is that the tank loses energy. It loses 2 kilowatts a day 365 days a year. So you're
just
talking
leaking.
So if you're running it on electricity, you're talking about at least £150 just losses on the tank.
So
it's not even included in any of the calculations.
Right. So then let me ask you, Bob, if air source heat pumps aren't the answer, if you have the space, are ground source heat pumps the answer?
Right. Ground source heat pumps are really the, which I had at Norbury, are really the creme de la creme. So they take up heat from the ground, which is around about 10 to 12 degrees centigrade.
And how far do you have to dig down to get that heat, Bob?
Right, yes. So on a domestic property, you'd need a hole 90 meters deep.
What? Right? Can you repeat that?
If you've got a ground source heat pump and you want to run it on a borehole,
yep,
you need to drill a hole 100 millimeters diameter,
yep,
90 meters deep. That's not quite like that. You can do, I did at Norbury, two boreholes at 45 meters deep.
Half. Oh, I see.
So I had to
halve it by doubling it.
Yeah. But in Norbury, we live in South London where the soil conditions are worse than North London. I don't know if you realize this. There's all sorts of problems that come from. That's why we've got no tube lines in South London, underground lines. So in Norbury, when I went down, I'm drilling. I've got my own drill machine on the site, which I pay for, which is really cheap. And I'm down like 25 meters, and I hit something called the red embeds. And I'm bringing up these million-year-old stones, which were a seabed millions of years ago, and I can't get through it. So if people in Norbury want to put a borehole down, watch out for the red embeds. So what I did, I had to put three boreholes down at 25 meters each.
Right, okay. So this is vastly expensive, though, presumably, Bob, to the level of labor and the work required to put these boreholes in. Does the end justify the means? Question.
Right. The key to the ground source heat pump, if you can get it in a borehole, is that 365 days a year, 24 hours a day, you're going to get this same quality of heat out of the ground. Right. And that means that your heat pump can work at peak efficiency. When you have an air source heat pump, it works on air temperature, and the air temperature varies. The only good news is that the air temperature in the UK, the average is around about 10 degrees centigrade. So overall, over the whole year, it kind of balances itself out. However, you will have to put dressing gowns on and make sure that you probably close the windows, and you might want some supplementary heating, perhaps, at certain times of the year.
Yeah.
Like in the winter.
Yeah. And then you're going for an inefficient heat system. And then you're thinking, is this all worthwhile, Bob? You know, this is what it comes back down to, isn't it?
Well, if our landlords, I'm a landlord.
Yeah.
If we have to pay for the capital cost, right? So do you want to pay £25,000 for a ground source heat pump?
Is that what it would cost, Bob, for the average property?
Yeah, £20,000 to £25,000 with the boreholes, the heat pump, the tank,
right,
the underfloor heating, whatever you're doing, the new insulation.
Assuming you have the space, of course, in your garden and for the tank in the first place.
Yeah. And can you get the boring mechanism,
yes,
in? Or can I put it in the front garden?
Yeah. And then what about ongoing maintenance, Bob? Is it expensive to then maintain?
Oh, God, don't talk to me about maintenance.
Really? Well, you see, you're the only one with experience, Bob. This is why this interview is so critical for people,
okay,
because people are just considering putting these in now, and you're the man that's done it. So tell us.
I had four heat pumps, right? Three ground source heat pumps and one which was called an evacuated air heat pump system, just to explain the difference. That one, it's not an air source heat pump outside. It's an air source heat pump that takes the air out of the building and then uses that air to lift the temperature of the water. That was a brilliant system. Right. Tell me where you can buy one. Are they advertised? I don't think.
I've never heard of it. No.
A bit of an experimental one. But the people in the house loved it. It took air out of the building. It meant fresh air was brought into the building. That was put into the underfloor heating system. It worked very well. However, here's the rub. Two of the heat pumps have worked for nearly 20 odd years brilliantly. Absolutely lovely. No problem at all. Two of them had problems. And they were, so this is at Christmas. And this meant that the poor people with their families and children had no water, hot water, or heating systems over the Christmas period. Now, the problem there was I had to get an engineer down, and I had to get the engineer really who worked for the company.
Presumably, these are not easy people to find. It's not like calling a gas safe man, is it, Bob?
No, absolutely. You've got it right. So just to come. So I'm waiting. So what did I do? It was cheaper for me. I was either going to wait a month and help the or put these poor people in a flat or do something. And it was a nightmare. So it was cheaper for me to put two combination boilers in and a new gas supply onto the side. And I got that done within 3 weeks.
That kind of saddens me, Bob, because you're a man I know is a great champion of the environment. And to hear you say that is a little bit sad, because I know that you would much rather be keen on the environment. And if there was anything you could do which would be practical, you would have done it, which is a bit of a shocker.
So if I was to put new, so I could have waited.
Right.
And had the engineer come down. He would have checked it. It cost like 250 quid for him to come down. He'd have checked it, found out what was wrong. He'd had to order the parts from wherever around the world to put it in. It might, if the condenser had gone, that means I need a different sort of engineer. I need an engineer that deals with refrigeration engineering. So, and in fact, heat pumps require three engineers. They need a refrigeration engineer. At certain points, they need an electrical engineer and they need a sort of a fitter, fit them in place. So, but you were right. So, by moving very quickly to the to the gas system, I've got two gas systems in at about 1,500, 1,800. Got a special deal on that's available to people putting new gas supplies on. And it was done very quickly. And now I have access to maintenance from a guy. I can look up the gas safe register. And there are people in Norbury who live over the road. I know they're going to do a good job.
Yeah, there are thousands of them. Yeah.
There are thousands of them.
Yeah. So
they're trained up and they can deal with it.
If these heat pumps aren't the answer, Bob, can we talk about solar? Because obviously we've now got PV panels have moved on a long way and they are producing a significant amount, and obviously people are now supplementing these with batteries. Can these be an answer?
Just take you one step further. Heat pumps are the answer, or can be the answer.
Okay, tell us.
If the property is insulated properly, right?
Right.
And everything else fits into place. There's a place for the tank, for example. All of that makes total sense and can work.
But does it need to be a new build where the building is kind of almost hermetically sealed to make this thing work?
Right. Look at where the big banks are putting their money. So the big banks are coming into the letting market, aren't they?
They are.
Right. They're making deals with the building companies and they're buying them en masse. They're making sure that those properties are fit for purpose into the future. It's not like many landlords that you deal with, and like me to some extent, who've got old properties who are not in that position.
Yes. Yes.
So they're future-proofing themselves. So the question is, can we future-proof ourselves for the landlords like ourselves?
Yeah, the second-hand market, because that's the reality of, you know, many millions of landlords up and down the country and much of the housing market. So this is quite critical, because I think we could find ourselves with an exodus of landlords from the sector, which is exactly what the market doesn't need, because rents will go up. And I think that this is why we've seen a lot of commercial interest in buy-to-let, because they can see the writing on the wall. And if the government do insist on these targets, which can't be met by many without sensible concessions, we could find a mass exodus from the sector.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm pretty much future-proofed on my properties in Norbury. So
yeah,
we'll find that properties like that will probably increase in value because of the heating system they've got, regardless of all the other problems with regard to maintenance. But if you can sort that out, then you're right. But so we've got to really wait for the industry to not sell us a heat pump or whatever. We've got to wait for them to get all the infrastructure right in place and the regulations right in place so it all works.
Yeah.
Not sound bites, not the government using it, their nudge team. Do you know about the nudge team?
No, tell me about the nudge team.
Okay. So there's a department in government departments called the nudge team. So if I give you a nudge, I might be persuading you to do something by, I will give you an ice cream if you go down the road and buy me some sweets. Right? That's okay. A kind of a nudge.
I'm already walking down the road, Bob.
So what happens with the government? They've got this team and they work out what you have to do to get people to change their behavior with a minimum amount of effort to get a maximum reward. In other words, to get people to do things. So I don't know whether the nudge team has been part of this idea about what's coming here with this £5,000 grant. Is it nudging? Is it just about the COP, or is it about soundbite? Or are they using this psychological method to push us all towards
yeah, it seems that they're pushing us ahead of technology that's not yet available for cost that is not really cost effective. You say, you know, for a fraction of the cost of a heat pump, you've ended up retro installing a system on a system that was exactly what the government are trying to push right now. So what we're saying is that we're lining ourselves up for future problems unless this nudges everybody in a direction that the heat pumps become more efficient, the engineers become more prevalent, and we get pushed in the correct direction in that way. But it seems to me that we're pushing maybe, I think it's right to push, and I want to see the changes happen for the environment side from anything else. But I just wonder whether they're pushing too hard too soon on this particular issue with heat.
Well, they're gonna get a kickback. There are the local authorities who have taken their heat pumps out over the UK because of the various places because of the problems with them. Not problems with them, problems with the system, basically. You know, maintaining them. Da di da di da. And in fact, I had a talk with the head of the environment group in the House of Commons, and what he said was that the key is to bring gas prices and electricity prices closer together. That is one of the keys. But this is that will become a political ball game, because if they start to manipulate those prices, and they can do it, and there is already talk about putting subsidies, which are on electricity, onto gas to bring the prices up to pay for renewable energy. Then we're in a kind of an interesting situation.
Yeah, but with gas prices already through the roof, I think that would be a politically hot potato. But we'll see, that might change over time.
I looked at the gas prices today. I think they're about three pence per kilowatt hour. I'm not sure. So gas prices around about 3 pence a kilowatt hour, and electricity prices about 16 to 17 pence per kilowatt hour. That's an equal measure. Yeah. So you've got a heat pump which is going to give you 1 to 3 efficiency. So divide the one into the other. You can see that you're not scratching
the surface, really.
No, in terms of the gas is the winner.
Yeah,
like cash is king. No, gas is king.
Yeah, yeah. It's really interesting to hear you say that, Bob, because I know that you're an environmentalist, but you're also a realist. So it's a really interesting conversation, this, for me. What about, I mean, now we have PVs come on a long way and battery storage has come on a long way.
Yeah.
Do you see this as a potential solution or supplement to it at least?
Right. The one of the issues is we've got, I don't know, millions of gas boilers in the UK. So one of the keys is to encourage people to put new, good quality, modulating gas boilers in. But the key technology which is being missed is a technology called flue gas heat recovery. Now, I know the inventor of it. I know him well. He was brilliant. He put his hand up on the vent where the
gas is escapes.
He said, "My hand is hot. What's going on here?" So he talked to his dad, who's a plumber. He wasn't a plumber, but anyway, he talked to his dad, who was, and he said, "Yeah, that's quite normal." So he developed a system of recapturing that heat, right, and using it to preheat the water into the boiler.
Genius. And they're available now, aren't they, Bob?
They are available. Yeah. But it's even more important than that, because so you've got the main supply. So you have a main supply coming into the boiler. You preheat that water so that there isn't a big boost. You know, like when you buy a gas boiler, they're massively over kilowatt. They're massively energy. They take a lot of energy. This is because you need to kick it in, a lot of energy to kick it into place.
Yeah.
So, but the higher the temperature of the water,
and less energy needed.
Then it doesn't need it. They measure that, and you won't use it. And you can get, for every 2 degree raise in temperature of that incoming water, you can get a 24% energy efficiency of the boiler.
Wow. So how much are these systems, Bob? People will be interested in these.
You can see these systems for like £300, £400.
And would they improve your EPC rating, I wonder?
No.
Is there no measure for them?
No.
So it's a nonsense then in some respects, isn't it?
And it's another cost for the landlord. But if you want to keep your tenants happy, if they're nice tenants, you want to keep them happy, keep their prices down, then put one in.
Yeah, absolutely, for that kind of price. Now, back onto the electricity side of things.
Can I just come back to the PV?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
PV, brilliant, okay? But the issue is many people have sold the wrong PV. In the UK, we really have a lot of clouds, and we want PV systems that work on light and not sunlight. So all of that. And if you have a flat PV panel, you'll only lose 10% efficiency. Think about that.
Right.
As opposed to this angle to the south.
I see. But so, also, Bob, isn't it the case that if part of panels are in shade and there's only one inverter,
absolutely,
the whole lot is out?
Yeah.
So you need more inverters, no?
No, you need a panel. They won't tell you this, but you need a panel system where each of the panels has got its own inverter on the back.
Yeah.
So if it's in the shade, it doesn't knock out the whole system.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Yeah. And that's interesting. But so that would give you quite a lot of efficiency.
It's brilliant. I haven't got them at Norbury. I haven't got them on my own houses. But I designed my son's house. So he's got an air source heat pump system. But on his tank, he's got two immersion heaters, right? One for the normal immersion heater, and the other one is to be connected up at some stage to a PV array. So the PV array takes its electricity into the immersion heater. The immersion heater is set at a very high temperature, higher than the normal running temperature of the whole system. So then that will pump electricity into that immersion heater and uplift. So that is absolutely brilliant system.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that would definitely have an impact on your EPC rating, wouldn't it? I just wonder if there's any practicality in terms of PV systems in order to try and meet this grade C requirement.
I don't know the answer to that. I need to look at that further. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah.
You will get an uplift.
I'm just not sure how big it is, Bob.
I remember at the time when I said to the guy, "Well, how much PV do I need to put in to get it uprated?" He didn't really know.
Yeah.
How much?
Yeah. I mean, but it's interesting technologies. I mean, we've seen now, obviously, electric cars. I think the mass take-up of electric cars is next year in the UK due to the ULEZ, amongst other things, and now the provision of many electric points up and down the country, even for people without off-street parking. So I think next year is going to surprise people and it is going to be massive for electric cars. And I wonder, on top of that, now we've got PV systems which are have batteries on, so that rather than relying on the sunlight, of course, we're storing the energy and using it when we need it at night at the peak times, rather than using peak electricity. So that could be a considerable economy for people, but at the moment at considerable cost, of course.
Yeah, I looked at this with Tesla. So they're battery systems, right? They're wall hung battery systems. And at my property down at the seaside, then we were proposing to put a PV array on the roof, trickle charge the batteries, and then we've come up and charge it partly off the batteries and partly off the main supply.
Yes.
The batteries were too expensive.
Yeah.
It was just didn't make sense at that stage. But in the 1850s again, it's the lead batteries. The old fashioned batteries are still good. They work. And there are people around the world who are doing development work on those batteries. So there is and they last forever.
Yeah, and there's some tech coming as well, Bob. First of all, Tesla have now got a roof tile. I don't know if you've seen that, but there's actually a PV roof tile, which was interesting to me. And also I noticed they're now developing a film, like a cling film, and even there's talk of a paint coming, which will be PV. They could be interesting developments, couldn't they?
My view is, if you've got a gas boiler.
Yeah, talk about practical measures, Bob, because that's what we really need to know about. What can we do? We're landlords, we're worried. How can we meet this grade C?
Right. First of all, upgrade your insulation.
Right.
Right. Okay. So you've got 100 millimeters. When they started doing insulation, it was 1 inch. Can you believe it? 1 inch when they started asking for it under the building regulations. So I would make sure that you upgrade to at least 200 or 250. Look at the EPC, how that affects the EPC rating. Don't just get an EP guy to come down there and give you just do it flat, do it in like 5 minutes and whatever, 2 hours or whatever, get out. Like, interrogate them. Say, what do I need to do before you come down so I can get a better rating?
Yeah. So we're talking low energy bulbs, insulation, double glazing, gas boiler. It's ironic that we're talking about gas boilers, isn't it? But gas condensing boiler, modern type boiler. Triple glazing or not?
Pardon?
Triple glazing? Was that a step too far?
Triple glazing is a nightmare. You're living in a soundproof chamber.
Yeah.
I mean, do you really want to divide yourself of birds singing on the outside?
Well, some people have got train lines behind them, Bob. They might prefer it there. We're not all in the countryside, Bob. But
well, I'm in Richmond. I'm near the river. I have problems with fog and hooters going on the river.
But you make a very good point there. So practical solutions. Number one, the cheap things that you can do to insulate your home. Number one, obviously, loft insulation makes a massive difference because we lose heat that way, don't we? And obviously, then we're talking about low energy bulbs, LED bulbs and the like, replacing standard bulbs. Draft proofing. That can help, won't it?
Yeah, I mean, draft proofing, is that part of the EPC?
I don't think it is, Bob. I'm just trying to think what practical measures, because there'll be people out there listening to this which fall into two camps. One will be landlords, which are worried about getting to their EPC rating of C or above. And then the second lot will be people saying, gosh, these gas prices are killing me. What can I do? You know, what can they do?
It's very difficult.
Yeah.
When I did my son's property, upgraded that. On the ground floor, we put insulation in the ground floor. It's a raised timber floor. So we insulated that floor. We put a screed on it and we put underfloor heating on it. We also put in a secondary energy supply. So on the EPC, it looks to see if there are other alternative energy supplies that are on the property. Now, I think that's probably to do with PV. I'm not sure it's to do with wood burner systems. So we won't put a wood burner systems into that property. Yep. And the issue here was that that was a bit like a free energy device because we run it off the timber off our site. However, what we're finding now is that air quality is really important. So is it the best thing to do to run it? But on my son's house, unfortunately, we did it like 12 years ago, whenever it was. That was a secondary supply. They've got an air source heat pump. So when rather than put electric heaters on, they run their log burner, and that keeps the building during that period.
Not a problem.
So I think we need to get it, the people who represent landlords, we need them to understand the necessity for EPCs to measure the efficiency or take consideration of the efficiency of the heating system that we've got in there. And they need to include flue gas heat recovery systems in that. That's a good point. That's all dealt with. Some of the other things I'm talking about, preheating the water with PV, for example, is a little bit more necessary.
I mean, what I suspect, Bob, is that bigger than that, unless technology moves on significantly within the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to see a massive backpedal on this, because I don't think the government really want to lose landlords that can't make the C if it's not possible to practically make them a C. And we're already desperate for space for tenants that can't afford their own homes. So I think there's going to be a massive backpedal on this. My guess is that we're going to get to a point where they say, well, okay, if you can't get to a grade C, then you must spend up to X thousand to get as close as you can to that grade, particularly with things like listed buildings. So I think there'll be some sort of compromise there. But what are your thoughts?
Well, I think so. I think it's fluid. I think the other issue is that as we get, I don't know whether you realize it, but the UK is one of the windiest places in Europe. So you get people from Poland. Ask one of your Polish people, you know, is it more windy here than it is in Poland? And you might find they say, yes, we had a bit of a shock when we come to the UK. It's quite windy. We've actually got more wind than anywhere else. A very high percentage of Europe, of the wind blowing over Europe, comes over the UK. So the chances are that renewable energy will come on stream, which it is doing. We've put a lot of money into that. And what we'll find is that the price of electricity may drop.
Yeah. So if the wind hasn't been blowing, has it? That's been a problem this year. But normally that's the case, isn't it?
That's normally the case. But you put more up. And the other anomaly about wind is you have to have a backup supply of energy in case it does go down. So it's not a case of getting rid of our existing energy production systems. You have to balance the two out. However, if we could produce more electricity from the renewables at certain times of the day when you've got an oversupply, it might be that you can buy this electricity in at really low prices. And I think there are some cases people are able to buy this electricity in from the companies because they use a lot of it. Almost give it away.
Indeed, Bob. It could be. And funny you should say that, because I was speaking to a friend that's very much into his green energy, and he was suggesting that there are even tariffs that if you had battery storage, you could buy energy from the grid at the cheap point, release it during the day, and sell their own energy back to them for more than you paid for it from them. So that would be an interesting exercise. But the point is that again, you know, battery storage could come in there as the cost of that comes down.
Then the other thing is, if the cost comes down, and we may even go back to storage heaters on our walls with bricks in them.
Wow, and
that's like cheap. That's like nothing. An electric heating system. Really cheap.
Rudimentary. Yeah. I don't know whether you've heard about this, but Tesla have a system now where they're able to trade energy via the grid, via the cars. So if you think about the number of electric cars that are coming on board, and then those cars that are sat idle with hundreds of miles that will never be used, then the grid can actually demand from those cars, and they can actually sell that energy back to the grid. And I thought that was quite a clever idea. It's not there yet, but you could, if you multiply the number of electric cars sat idle, and then look at demand, if the grid could then demand from those cars, there would be logic to that, and there'd be an economy in it for the car owners as well.
Absolutely.
No,
we looked at this a number of years ago, and if you've got a Land Rover running on its engine, it could provide enough electricity for 4 houses at that time. So you could have a situation where you've got enough battery supply to actually put in a lot of energy into the property. And likewise, you can take energy out of the system when Tesla got these very fast methods of
charging.
They're quite expensive, but they've got, so we'll have that.
There was a story in Australia, Bob. I don't know whether you read this, but I read a story in Australia. They put in southwestern Australia, they put in a battery storage grid, which is the equivalent of a power station, but with huge batteries, like monstrous batteries. They put them online, and they were on a kind of default, if the electricity ever goes down, then just kick in and use these batteries. Well, part of southwestern Australia went down for a day, and nobody knew it. Until the next day, when they realized the batteries had just automatically kicked in and actually took over the grid for that period of time and literally saved the whole of that part of Australia. So it just goes to show that these battery technologies, they do work, they do store huge amounts of power, and it can be reused on a mass scale.
And it's got to be in the EPC.
Yeah.
So let's get the people who represent us to hustle the government, so that all of the benefits that landlords can put into the buildings they're acknowledged for it.
Reflected.
And they can upgrade their EPC ratings and do their tenants a good service at the same time.
Yeah. Well, Bob, thanks so much for speaking to us today. It's been an absolute pleasure and really revealing, because, as I say, you're one of the few people in the country that has long-term experience of these systems. And it's great to hear, instead of all the sun shining, everything's lovely, actually hearing about the practical day-to-day problems as well. That was very honest and reflective of you. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Obviously, you're a great client of ours as well. Bob is a landlord, and we're very proud to have acted for him for many years, including from the very beginning of the Earth Dome site and everything.
And Ken, I need to thank you. 22 years ago, I walked into your office and said, what do you think if I build 4 flats in Stamford Road?
Yeah.
And you were smiling. You said, go on, go ahead and do it. You'll never look back.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're one of, there are some other people who are involved who said this also. And I wanted to particularly thank you for your enthusiasm for that. Absolutely.
Thank you,
the whole family will never look back.
Thank you, Bob. And thank you for your enthusiasm for all things eco-friendly, you know, because, you know, on the one hand, that's what's refreshing about this discussion, is that I know that in your heart of hearts, you're an eco warrior. You want this to go right. But also you're a practical man, and you apply things in a practical sense. So it's really refreshing to hear that. So thanks ever so much for your time.
My pleasure.
And thanks so much for listening to the Property Buyer and Sellers podcast this week. I hope you've all enjoyed it. We'll be back next week with another edition. Bob Harris, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.